Okay, some people have come up to us and asked if we talk a little bit about some of the things that have happened in our family to do healing and for us to begin to heal as a family, because there's been a lot of damage, and it's taken a long time. So it's not an overnight matter, and that's what the book says. But one of the things that I'd like to read, just in case, we were talking about this earlier, because I'm in both fellowships, AA and Al-Anon, and one of the statistics that we hear is that every alcoholic touches at least 10 people. In that case, Al-Anon ought to be 10 times bigger than AA. But it's not. And it's because it's like you can see alcohol and drugs. And when you put it down, you have something to put down. But it's a very insidious thing. Most people think that their problem is the alcoholic. The problem is alcoholism. And this is what the book says. Years of living with an alcoholic is almost sure to make any wife or child a neurotic. The entire family is, to some extent, ill. That's what happens with the disease of alcoholism. Everybody gets ill. And I have seen people die from the disease of alcoholism and they didn't take a drink. People commit suicide. They end up in insane asylums. There's all kinds of things that happen to people from the disease of alcoholism, and they're not the alcoholic. So what we began to do is to try to heal. And one of the things that we begin with is the steps. We do the steps. We do the fourth step. We take a fifth step. We see what our character defects are. We make a list of the people we need to make amends to, and then we commence to go make amends. We make amends, direct amends, whenever possible. And what happens is we go to our families and we start to make amends. And an amend is not "I'm sorry." We're the king of the "I'm sorry's." The book says we go and we state our wrongs, and then we ask the person, "What is it I can do to make this right?" To make an amend is to repair, to fix. And that's what we're trying to do, is repair the damage we've done. My hardest amends were to my sons, because that's, to me, where the damage was done. The most. That's what I did the most. Now, they were certainly not the only people that I hurt, but they were the people that I hurt the most. And when I made amends to my sons, you know, it was very difficult, but I can assure you that we didn't get up from that amend and they'd say, "Oh, gosh, she's all better now." That was not what happened. It took a long time. One day I was sitting outside, and I was sitting by a pool, and I had a Coke, and it was sitting by the side of me. And my oldest son walked by and picked it up and smelled it. And I'd been sober about 18 months. And I just felt myself get a little... But see, he still didn't trust it. He still didn't trust that I was sober. It takes a long time. There's lots of families who go home and the lights don't go on, or the phone doesn't work, or there's no water, and different things like that. And sometimes it takes a lot of years for somebody to flip on the light switch and the light comes on every day. Every time you flip it on, and, you know, 5 or 6 years later they say, the lights are on. It takes a long time. It says that we will not make these amends in a lifetime. We will not right the past in this lifetime. So what we have to do is we have to keep doing it. My job is to be the very best mom I can be all the time. Parents, it's hard because there's many times to start the healing process of the family afterwards. Because many times, as a child of a parent, even though I'm the one in recovery, we feel like that what was done to us was far worse than what we did to them. But what I have to stand responsible for is what I did and begin to go make those amends. The family afterwards is the beginning. It is just the constant step nine. A constant step nine. I'm the one with a program. I've never heard anything from my parents. My job is to be the very best daughter I can be. That's my job. I feel personally I've always been my mother's mother. That's how I feel. Doesn't matter how I feel. My job is to be the very best daughter I can be. That's my job. My job is to be the very best mother I can be. And little by little, day by day, the family begins to heal. Sometimes the amends that we have to make in order for the family to start to heal is to step back and let go. Maybe a child has said to you, "I don't want you here. Don't bother me." Or a parent, whatever. "Don't bother me. I don't want you here." And what we have to do is step back and allow that. Maybe all we get to do is send a card. I have a woman I sponsor who had 5 children taken from her. None of those 5 children wanted to see her. They didn't care how sober she was. And so the family afterward didn't heal very fastly. But what she began to do is she began to send cards, and then she began to reach out as much as she could. And pretty soon they let her in just a little bit more, and then just a little bit more. It's a very slow process. And see, we're the feel-good people. We want to go in there, say I'm sorry, and everything be right. It's not going to be that way sometimes. It wasn't for me. It was not that way. Sometimes I have to just bite my tongue. I have both of my sons are married, and they're doing things, and they're into, you know, they have their own children, and there's just lots of times I feel like that my way's better. My job is to do nothing, to just do nothing, to keep quiet. I don't need to be telling them how to screw their kids up as well as I screwed mine up. I don't need to do that. It's just to allow that family to heal. One of the things that I do a workshop with my youngest son, James, and we pretty much go into detail about the things we've done to heal our relationship. My son James was a practicing alcoholic until I was 6.5 years sober. And our relationship, after he got sober, began to really get much better. Because that anger stayed for a very long time. My oldest son, Russ, is still very angry at me. He, you know, I can say to Russ, you know, one day we were talking and he said to me, I just wish you would, you know, I could help you with the anger you have toward me. I'm not angry at you. And I know, just leave that alone, you know, but there's always, I want to get in there and help him, you know, I just want to help him, get it going so that he doesn't have to feel that way. But I need to just let that heal on its own time. And that patience and tolerance sometimes can be really, really hard. My son and I were talking, and we tried to describe some of the stuff that we had done. And one of the things that was more difficult for me is I sat down and I made amends to my children. I liked it didn't make it through him making amends to me. Because, you see, I just felt like I had done so much worse. But he began, and I knew I had to let him do that. So those of you who have it going both ways, it isn't any easier to hear than it is to do. Some of our children don't ever make it. They don't ever see that we really mean it. And what we have to do is just keep putting one foot in front of the other. What is wonderful about the chapter, The Family Afterwards, is that all the good stuff is there. That's where it says, we absolutely insist on being happy. Here's where we live happily, joyous, and free. This is where I begin, as the book says, to do some self-sacrificing. Go do things with my family I don't feel like doing. Go sit with my 86-year-old mother in a little podunk town. And podunk, in case you need to know, is a little bitty dump of a place in this little bitty town in Texas that is so boring you can't even stand it. There's not anything going on. And listen to my mother, who's got so much dementia, say the same thing over and over and over, and me act like she said it for the first time. That's part of making amends. I get to be of service to my mother. That's the family afterwards. My mother, I have already committed to myself, my mother is not going into any kind of home. Dave and I have already said, if we have to, we'll go live in her house with her until she dies. That's the least I can do for my mother. That's what I feel like I can do for my mother. I want to be the one to take care of her. That's my commitment to her. That's doing something for the family afterwards. Because what I've done, there's not any way I will ever repay the heartbreak I've caused my mom. It's the very least I can do. Call. She lives in Texas. I live in Washington. Call. Make an effort. Put myself out. I'd much rather spend my money, you know, going somewhere fantastic than spending my money flying into Stamford, Texas. But that's what I need to do. I believe that the main thing that we have to do as recovering alcoholics in order for our families to heal is we have to be the spearhead to just do the right thing. I've heard people that say, well, I just can't be around my mother or my father because, you know, this, that, and it's a really painful situation. And it's like, well, maybe because of you, if you can just start to send letters or something, this will heal. Maybe the hardened heart of your parent, because of whatever happened to them, will begin to soften and heal because of your membership and service in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That those relationships will begin to heal. And that's what we've been talking about this weekend, is relationships and doing things I don't necessarily want to do. You know, it's not necessarily always going to be fun, but it will be the right thing to do. Because, you see, it's not always about me. It's about what is it I can do for you. How can I make your life just a little bit better? I was I just have to share this, if you know, to have some something if you've never done this. My mother is she's 86 years old. Her little mind is just about gone, And she can't get in a bath by herself. And I have a lady that comes in once a week that gives her a bath. The rest of the time it's just a sponge bath. And I put her in the tub, and I washed her hair, and when she got out, I rubbed her legs and massaged her with lotion. And she just looks at me, and she just puts her little hands there, and she says, "You know, you're such a good daughter. You know, that's what you get to, that's what, because of you, we get to do those things. And we get to be good daughters, and good sons, and good parents, and good grandparents. And we get to do the next right thing because we are doing recovery in the family afterwards." Care about your family. They're the ones who have paid the highest price for our alcoholism. They're the ones that have hurt the most from our drinking. Dave talked about little kids, because you're sober, get to go to bed unafraid tonight. Well, you know, some of you didn't get to go to bed unafraid, and some of your children didn't either. But if we stay here, we can begin to heal those relationships by just doing the next right thing. So I'll let Dave share on the family afterwards.
I know you all must be getting very tired, and so this is going to be just a brief status report on our family. When Polly and I got sober, we were not even in the same family, and everywhere you looked, it was just disaster. Children hated parents, parents hated children. Mothers and fathers didn't particularly care for each other. Grandparents were something to be tolerated, never enjoyed. And so here we are, all this time later. And it is, obviously, sobriety is not an event, it is a process. And so a quick status report. Well, our oldest son, Russ, is happy. He's married. He and his wife are doing well. They have two daughters. They have found their path in church. They are in church. They are heavily involved in church, and they are thriving. They love us very much, and we love them very much. Our granddaughters love to talk to their grandmother on the phone, and that is a warm, rich relationship. Our son, James, in Chicago, he is married to a lady named Kelly. He has 20 years sober, as Polly's told you many times. Kelly has 14 years. They have three children, and our oldest grandson is deaf. And because of you, not because of us, but because of Alcoholics Anonymous, that little boy has no idea that he's handicapped. He doesn't know he's handicapped. Because of you, it has never been... I mean, you know, when you have children with special needs and they have siblings, things get kind of complicated, or can. But because of you, it has never been too expensive. It has never taken too much time. It has never been too late. It has never been too early. They are the best parents you have ever seen in your life, just because of you. They did not learn those skills at home, let me guarantee you. And we are very, very close. We spend as much time with our kids as we can. We have a daughter, my daughter, in Denver. And perhaps you've noticed this weekend that I seem to spend a lot of time around young women. That's because, you know, I had to depend on you for many years, and I still do, to take care of my daughter. You know, that's the way it is, you know. I'll take care of your girl, you take care of mine, you know. I will be an example to your daughter, you know, that not everybody is going to be whistling or, you know, or acting inappropriate. That there's a lot of people around that will encourage her to have a vision for her life and to have something, you know, to not amuse herself with bad boys and all that other stuff because she's bored. You know, do something with your life, because that's I give your daughter the kind of advice that I and attention that I hope somebody gave mine and is giving mine. And we can't save, you know, we couldn't save our own kids, our boys. We couldn't save them. What did we do? What did I do that caused my son, who has now died, what did I do to cause him to get sober or anything? I just was an example. You know, I didn't tell him what to do or what not to do. I didn't tell him how he should act or not act. But because of this program, our entire family has been healed. Now, all of this sounds, you know, we're up here talking all weekend long about this big deal and that big deal, and isn't it wonderful, and we're all happy. And well, if this seems overpowering, let me try to take a little bit of the fear out of it. You do it one day at a time. Just one day at a time. You don't have to be wonderful for the rest of your life. You just have to be wonderful today. You know, are you gonna get eternal life? Don't even think about it. You can't answer that question. Don't even ask it. Can you get your mind wrapped around eternity? Of course not. Can you get your mind wrapped around, you know, I have relationships that are in shambles. You know, how on earth will I ever fix them? You do it one day at a time. Just get up every morning and say, today I'm going to be the best bee I can be all day long. Just today. I can do something today that would terrify me if I thought I had to do it for the rest of my life. I can do it for today. I can do it today. So that's what takes the fear out. That's maybe one of the most important things you'll learn in Alcoholics Anonymous. One day at a time. Just do it today. And watch the day string together. And you look up one day, and man, you can't look. You know, your kid will come in and say something, you'll think, holy mackerel, that was great. Where'd he get that? He got it from you. He will have gotten it from you. She will have gotten it from you. So, I guess we're supposed to do questions and answers. Is that what you want to do? You going to do it? Do you have written questions? Oh, break? You going to take a short break? Oh, okay. Sorry. I missed that part. Okay, here are some questions that we have been given, and I will just go through them as they this. I'll read the question, and then I will tell you what my response is, and I'll ask my wife if she has anything to add, and we'll just alternate back and forth between the two of us. Okay, so the first one is, what are the solutions for an adult child? Presumably that means an adult child of an alcoholic. Are they the same as for AA? Commitment to a home group and action. Do the same things apply for us? That to me is a very easy question. The answer is yes. It is quite possible that as an adult child, or as a spouse, a member of Al-Anon, or as a child of an alcoholic, spouse of an alcoholic, close family member of an alcoholic, it is quite possible that you have actually become sicker than the alcoholic. You have acutely felt and been through many things that the cold sober, that the alcoholic went through drunk. So it's quite possible that you have been damaged worse than the alcoholic. And I don't know of anything that heals that kind of damage, that kind of emotional and spiritual and mental trauma, but the same thing that addresses alcoholism, and that is a spiritual awakening. And I only know one place to tell you to go to have one of those, and that is to the appropriate 12-step program. We have become really good at that. There's a lot of support for you in those programs. There are a lot of people in Al-Anon and in ACA and in AA who have been through all this and who can help you. So the solutions for an adult child is to become affiliated with a 12-step program. Work the same steps that the alcoholic works. What you're saying is that I am powerless over alcohol, whether it's in your body or mine. Now, I'm just as powerless over alcohol as you are, and I don't even drink. And that's what's so spiritually traumatizing, is that, you know, you had no choice in the matter. You had no say. Your father didn't ask you if it was okay with you if he were an alcoholic. Your mother didn't say, may I have your permission to be a drunk? You had no choice. But you have a choice on a solution. You can stay in that misery and throw your life away. Please don't do that. Or you can just come in and find a program that you fit into. They're around. There's Al-Anon. Great program. Work the steps. Do the same thing that everybody else does that needs a spiritual awakening. And guess what? It'll work great for you too. I can march. I can parade Al-Anon people in front of you as long as you'll sit there and watch them go by, who are well and happy and joyous and free.
What if you get a sponsee and he or she is not in a condition to read and write, but desperately needs a cleaner house? I have had that. And there are many ways to help that person. First of all, I don't know what you have here in Denmark, but in English, they have AA on the AA Big Book on tape. So that's one of the things. If a person can't read, get them the AA Big Book on tape. And then what I have done when it comes to doing a four-step is we sit down and I write it down as they tell it to me. And then we do the fifth step, and we make the list of character defects, and we make the amends list. The only difference is I'm working with them and I'm doing the writing. So it can be done. Okay, let me do one and then he can get up here. Do you offer yourself as a sponsor, or do those who need a sponsor have to ask for it? Both. I'm real good at assigning myself, to be your sponsor. We have in our home group, if I'm not assigning, I'm sending one of my sponsees to assign herself. Like I said, I don't know where we ever got the idea. They didn't used to do it in the old days that newcomers can interview sponsors. I just, maybe they'll change later, but what they need is a sponsor now, right now, so that they can get to meetings and so forth. And I'll just go up to somebody in a meeting and say, do you have a sponsor? If they say no, I'm it. I just tell them I'm it. Here's what we're going to do, and I'll pick you up at thus and so. And sometimes that they are just so shell-shocked, they don't even know what to do. But you know what? Most of the time, we both get to stay sober. And What I do is then, you know, if not, if they don't have a sponsor, if one of my sponsees is standing close and I say, "Do you have a sponsor?" They say no, I say, "She's it." So I'm not shy.
And with regard to that question, let me pose a question, a quick question for you. Where the hell would we all be if Bill had waited for Dr. Bob to call? Okay, the question is, what made you surrender to God, AA, and the program? What made me surrender was that I was just about to die of the disease of alcoholism, and I simply could not go on with my life without something. I just could not go on. And, you know, I had all the drama stuff, you know. I mean, I had frequent thoughts of suicide and so forth. But I took it right down to the wire. Because, you know, in our culture, surrender is shameful for men. You know, for men. Surrender is shameful. You don't ever surrender. So it's not easy. And it's just, you know, it was either do that or die. And I'll tell you the honest truth, I can't go back in my memory and find details about that answer. When you're drinking as much as I was drinking at the time, things are pretty foggy. You know, there's a lot I don't remember.
I'm just gonna stay up here and do this.
He's my manservant.
Yeah, Polly's manservant.
How do I stop caring about what people think of me and start caring about others? One of the things I'd like to say is it takes practice. I'd love to say I get up every morning and say, and the thought that runs through my head is, gee, how I'd like to go serve you. It doesn't. You know, the first thing that I think about is, what about me? But what I do is I take actions contrary to the way I think. I take actions contrary to the way I feel and the way I think. I just do the action. And that's what the book talks about. It is not necessary that we feel or think anything. Just do the action. And I wake up and if somebody's not calling me, I get on the phone. Just take an action and go do something kind for somebody. If it's nothing but letting them in on the freeway, for those of you who drive.
It says, I have trouble passing the message on. What can I do to help this? Our 12th step says we try to carry this message to alcoholics. And the truth is, you are the message. The way you live and the way you react to your life, that is the message. You can't convince somebody you're wonderful if you're not. I mean, you could try. We have all tried that. Many of us still do. Yeah, but you are the message. And as far as you deciding who needs what in terms of the message, that's, I don't know how you do that either. I don't know how to do that. I tell you how I make myself of service is I get up and volunteer every morning for service. I report for duty every morning by saying the third step prayer and become willing to do whatever's put in front of me. And that's what I do. I don't go around looking for people that need the message. I just get up and say, God, you know, I'm very happy for you to use me in any way you see fit today, and just go about my day. That's all. If you're ready, you'll come face to face with somebody that needs your help. And you may not even know you helped them. Don't make that a requirement.
Would you ever say no to sponsor a person? If yes, when and why? The only thing I say no to is that I am in both programs, but I only sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's because I just want to focus in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I really do have a strong belief in singleness of purpose. So that's why. But I never say no to sponsoring someone in AA. And one of the things that happens is when somebody asks me to sponsor them, I say yes, and I say I have one requirement, and that is that you have to call me for 30 days. You have to call me every day for 30 days. And I have a really good reason for that. I just want to see how willing somebody is to work. And if you're really not, I'm not going to work harder on your program than you are. It just gives me an indication how willing a person is. Would you ever fire a sponsee? If yes, when and why? I have never fired a sponsee. I've been fired a lot. But I have never fired a sponsee. And usually what happens is that I'll go a million miles with somebody who's willing. But if not, I mean, I can tell when somebody's just, you know, they've just either asked me to be a sponsor in name only. I think I sponsor people somewhere. Somebody once said, "Oh, you're such and such a so sponsor." I am. You know, they probably asked me 5 years ago, and I've never heard from them. I'm not their sponsor. That is not sponsorship. So I've never fired anybody. It has just never been. What usually happens is that I don't demand anything of anybody. I just tell people, I expect you to do what I do. And sometimes that's just more than people want to do. So they fire me. You know, they don't think they have the time to be as involved as I am. That's okay. You know, whatever works for you. But I just, you know, I'm forever volunteering people I sponsor. They just need to be doing the deal. Okay.
Since I live on a small island with no person to sponsor me, what do you think about this idea? A group of women doing step study out of a book with no sponsor. Okay. A couple of things. One is, I think doing a step study out of the book is an absolutely fantastic idea. We do those a lot, you know, where you just read the book. I mean, and talk about what you just read, you know, and try to see how it might apply to your life. We do that a lot in the U.S. We have a lot of step study and book study meetings. So I think that is a great idea. If you don't have anybody that you feel compatible with that can be your sponsor, if you have access to the internet, for example, that is a very powerful tool that we can use. Now, I want to say that nobody that I sponsor will ever get the idea from me as their sponsor that sitting at home at night alone in front of a flickering monitor on an AA chat room is the same as going to a meeting. No. Sorry. You know. However, I have people that I sponsor by email, so does Polly. And it is preferable that you and see, and this step study that you're talking about, or book study, this gives you a lot of face time with other alcoholics. Okay, that's important. You need close relationships, because once in a while when a crisis comes, you know, if you have a sponsor that's 8 hours away through eight different time zones and the internet, then they're not going to be very quickly available to you. So, you know, if you do have access, this doesn't say whether you do or don't, but if you do have access to the internet, Find somebody that you're really compatible with. And strike up a communication with them over the internet, through email. Another thing is that, you know, I have no idea what kind of cost the phone service may be where you are. But, you know, also phone service, you know, you can phone sometimes. You know, that also makes it relatively easy to be somebody's sponsor. But don't think that I'm recommending that you do that instead of spending time with people. You need to have some face time with other alcoholics.
This is the last one. I think this is the last one.
No.
We already did that? Nope. That's it.
That's it?
Did we do this one?
Yeah. We did that.
Oh.
Is that it? What do you think?
No, we did that one. We did it! All right. We are done! Thank you. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you, thank you.
You know, in just a few short days, we have fallen in love with you, and it's going to be really hard it's already very hard to know that you won't be going on with us in our life. We're going to see a lot of you again. I know that to be true because we have people sitting in the audience who thought we'd never meet again, and here they are and here we are. So a lot of us will meet again, and our paths will continue to cross through the years. But that's not, you know, for alcoholics, that's not enough. We want to all be in the same home group together. We want to see you every day. So your kindness and your generosity has just been overwhelming, and we love you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.